Another day to start all over again. Another day to redirect and refocus your energy and yourself, and make it happen. I also want to start this morning with a little heavy heart. I know it's the first show for me of the new year, and I want to say, from the depths of my heart, I wanted to give my condolences to the Harrell family. For the loss of their sister, their aunt, just the friend, and that is Desiree Harrell, better known as D. Silky. She was murdered on the 2nd of January, and again, my heart and my condolences go out to the family. Such senseless killing that we as black people, the self-hatred is so strong in us that whenever we see someone that looks like us and the hatred that we have for ourselves, we just expose it and just spill it all over on whomever looks like us. And that, to me, has got to stop. I want to do something new for the new year, and that is to start the programs off with scripture, whether it's from the Torah or Quran or the Bible. I think Medaneter, Hosea, I think it's really good that we begin our day or our program with some form of calling forth the ancestors. So right now I'm going to read the 94th Psalm, and it is, Lord God, to whom vengeance belongs. O God, to whom vengeance belongs. Shine forth, rise up, O judge of the earth. Render punishment to the proud. Lord, how long will the wicked triumph? They utter speech, and they speak insolvent things. All the workers of iniquity boast in themselves. They break in pieces your people. They break in pieces your people, O Lord, and afflict your heritage. They slay the widow and the stranger, and they murder the fatherless. And yet they say, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob understand. Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? When will you be wise? He who planted the ear, shall he not hear? And he who formed the eye, shall he not see? He who instructs the nations, shall he not correct? He who teaches man knowledge? The Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are futile. Blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law, that you may give him rest from the days of adversity until the pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not cast off his people, nor will he forsake his inheritance. But judgment will return to the righteousness, and all the upright in the earth will follow it. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? Unless the Lord had been my help, my soul would soon been settled in silence. If I say, my foot slips, your mercy, O Lord, will hold me up. In the multitude of my anxieties within me, your comforts delight my soul. Shall the throne of iniquity, which devises evil by law, have fellowship with you? They gather together against the life of the righteousness and to condemn the innocent blood. But the Lord has been my defense and my God and the rock and my refuge. He has brought on them their own iniquity and shall cut them off in their own wickedness. The Lord God will cut them off. And I think that's very, very powerful. May the Lord bless the hearer and the reader of his word. Again, that was the 94th Psalm, the first verse to the 23rd. Well, today the subject, I want to pick to talk about is black leadership. And it's very important that we discuss this going into the new year, because as Brother Malcolm said, we've been hoodwinked. We've been bamboozled. Okay? We've been taken advantage of, not only from the European, the Caucasian. You've been taken advantage of from your own people, your own fellow slaves. Okay? And I say that, and I use that word loosely. Okay? What we have here, and this is on the local level, it's on state level, it's on the federal level. Unfortunately, to me, the biggest problem for black people and African people in general is black sellouts. Just as it was through the plantation time, just as it was through slavery, massa, our house burning, massa, Hyatt finna run away, massa, they talking what they gonna do down the, and massa would always reward those good slaves with a few trinkets and maybe a few more extra scraps of meat or what sweets, trinkets. It didn't take a lot, but what it was is a lot of bargaining going on. And today we have the same mentality. We have the same mentality with black leadership. Without getting real technical on the names, just look at them. I mean, you have a lot of people who are out there and they under the guise of civil rights, okay? But you notice that black people collectively ain't never moving forward, and they are never going anywhere. So there has to be some kind of underlying, there has to be some kind of hidden formula that we must be missing. Okay? Because anybody that is truly, truly working for the freedom of black people, they're outside that system. Have you noticed that? Because if they're in that system and they are really bringing you rightful, valid information, they're going to be dead. They're going to be assassinated. Trust me. I've seen enough now. I've watched enough now that there's no... I've been on the planet long enough. No, now this is a design. So I'm not easily fooled. You know, we watched the Battle of Tonkin. We watched Vietnam. We watched the assassination of Dr. King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers. These are planned, diabolical execution. And guess what? On a lot of these murders, especially if they've been done in black community with black leadership, most of them were hand-fed and hand-picked to the assassin by black leadership. Yeah. I mean, and for those of you who, you know, think I'm just rambling on and I don't got nothing better to do with my time than to make up lies on black people, why don't you listen to some of the brothers like Steve Coakley? Look at some of the activity, unfortunately, that was around and surrounding the good Reverend Jesse Jackson and his activities in the FBI and how many informants that they had during the takedown of Dr. King. I mean, it's disheartening and it's sickening. From my own experience, I know that every time black folk, especially in leadership, say something against the grain that the quote-unquote power establishment can't deal with, they're going to find a way to trump up charges. They're going to find a way to have you locked up. You know, most of the charges they charge you with are usually bribery, stealing the funds, misappropriation of funds, voter fraud, all these things. I know because I've been there. Okay? Looks like we got a caller on the line. I don't know. I see a caller, area code 718. Maybe you got a question or a comment. Caller, you have a question? Got a comment?
Yes, sir. Hi, my name is Slaudin from New York City. Just so relevant. You have such a short period of time. I know you're on the roll, and everything you're saying is so relevant. I agree with you 100%. Bobby Hemmett, you know, spoke of, and Steve Coakley speak of the Black Boulay. E. Franklin Frazier wrote a famous book called The Black Bourgeoisie. Nathan Hare wrote an excellent book, a black sociologist, you know, called The Black Anglo-Saxons, you know, the Jack and Jill phenomenon.
Absolutely.
You know, all of these are just, there is a, but also, if I may add, you know, and I know you're aware of it, as you said, that these people have been not elected but selected, you know, like Barack Obama. He's not even an African-American, but we're quick.
Absolutely.
He's a Kenyan-American. You know, and also, if I may say, that there's a phenomenon of, as soon as black people, we were starting the Black Power Movement, Black Liberation Army. It was, as you said, COINTELPRO, there was an agent provocateur called Othello, his code name. He was a black man who basically was most instrumental in destroying Fred Hampton was murdered, as you said. You know, Bunchy Carter, mm-hmm. They got them to, he had to kill. So, yeah, as you said, there's a long history of our leaders being murdered. You know, and usually it's a black agent provocateur. But, you know, we are, we have spies. But I also want to say it's very, very important that black immigration, black immigrants coming from other societies who had a colonial mentality, petty bourgeois, most of the intelligent black people in the 60s and 70s, 50s and 60s and 70s, they were mostly, you know, influenced by, you know, they had a very rational, many of them were communists, many of them were very well educated, you know, they were against capitalism. All of a sudden we went from a shift from, you know, black people rejecting capitalism. I'm not saying either one or the other, maybe you can comment on that, but the advent of this kind of Babylon type phenomenon where you had different groups of people, not just black immigrants, but all immigrants, coming into society, kind of dilute the movements of the people who had been here for a while, black and white, labor movement, all of these people who had a different background, who weren't about fighting for social justice, weren't about fighting, you know, the establishment. They were thankful. Their goal was to ingratiate themselves to the establishment. I think that the influx of black immigrants to a large degree undermined black solidarity for all of us. One more thing. The black people, and if you look at the black people like Darcus Howe, Wayman Bennett, Paul Gilroy, black West Indian immigrants to England, basically are making the same statements that black Americans against the white establishment that we're making here. But the black West Indian, the black African, they have become, as Dr. Chancellor Williams spoke of, a buffer. They have become a buffer to us. So that phenomenon has not even been explored, how it's affected all of us. So maybe you can discuss that, because this is, you know, the reason we're not having research on this is because the people who have the resources and the motivation to do it are not in positions where they can. You know, and it's not about putting down these other people. We have to look at the fact that we are, as African Americans, we're a particular ethnic group. And we had, and the 500 years of experience that we had in dealing and interfacing with racism and white supremacy, the most powerful country on the face of this earth, there's a lot that we have to offer the planet. And then we should protect our ethnic identity just because that's who we are. That's simple. So we can collaborate with other groups, but we're not going to be absorbed or destroyed by you know, coalescing with other groups, particularly if those other groups have their own issues with black identity that they haven't resolved. So maybe you could discuss that.
Wow. You discussed it. That was very profound.
Thank you, Bob.
And I think what you just said was, yeah, very, very profound, because, you know, when you look at the progression of us, and as far as, you know, just Africans or wherever we may be across the diaspora, I look at it as there's such a disconnect in our, and not just because of the Atlantic slave trade. I mean, I think my personal opinion, and, you know, you could just, you know, add what you have to say. I just think that because, I mean, white supremacy is so ingrained in every aspect of our lives, and it's like a snake, and it goes internationally, and it's just woven everywhere. I mean, you got people in Brazil that are using bleaching cream and whatever.
Talk about it, brother.
You know,
in Africa, they've outlawed bleaching cream in Zambia.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, come
mm-hmm.
on, talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So it's become, you know, why are we hating? We hate ourselves so much. And that, to me, is because I do believe until we can see the oneness of ourselves as we are all over the earth, you know, if we can't identify with ourselves, you know, throughout the earth, we could never be liberated here. It's impossible. And if there's no connection, if there's no, and not just connection, even, I mean, just in terms of, in a fantasy sense, I mean, even in terms of economics, in terms of goods and services, and if we can't begin to capitalize, can't begin to take the skills that we've learned from the master over here and take it to maybe some of our underprivileged brothers that are living in third world countries that maybe can use our services, because trust me, I believe that we're the best trained slave that ever has been. I think we've learned so much in a short period of time that we can go anywhere with these skills. I mean, we've run states, we've been in government, we've run police departments. Why can't we take these skills? And how has white supremacy damaged us so much that there is just a disconnect? We can't even exchange goods and services with one another anymore. That, to me, you know, and I say, okay, when will it end? Does it start with we need to build new Africans? So we know we have to start in the school systems, and we can't expect the person that enslaved us to educate us. So we have to really get serious about how we're going to educate our children. If we have to start schools in our homes, if we have to, because we're going to lose a lot of people in this war. There are so many black folks that are just not prepared for what is happening to us. They are not even thinking about what is happening to us, and we are dying. It just a disproportionately, the numbers are just crazy. So when we look at, and then we, when we add on what you're talking about, when we start talking about our brothers and sisters coming in from Caribbean and other places and the program, and when we're talking about, I mean, we have so many dynamics in our group itself. I'm saying, when are we going to get serious about ourselves? I really believe. And I really thank you for the call this morning, too.
Well, I want to ask you, for some reason, my computer cut off. I want to know, could you tell me the name of your show again so I could, you know, like for the archives, and also I'd like to give you, if possible, I give you my email address.
Oh, that would be great.
Well, yes, the name you can contact.
I would love that
certainly.
Very much, because what is very important is that like-minded people to stay on the path and stay focused with one another, because truth, like living waters, it runs, and it has to stay connected. And I do, well, to name of the show, first of all, is To Liberate, and I'm your host, Khadija. And again, I really want to thank you for being here this morning. This is the first show of the year.
I'm sorry, the name of the show is To Liberate?
It's To Liber, and the number 8.
Oh, okay, To Liberate. Okay, a play on words.
Mm-hmm.
For excellent, To Liberate, okay.
And that email, give me that email.
Okay, it's all small case letters. Letter O dot Bing, B-I-N-G, 62@yahoo.com. Letter O dot Bing, B-I-N-G, 62@yahoo.com. Please email me.
Is that a B?
I'm sorry.
Say that again. O dot?
O dot Bing, B-I-N-G, 62.
Okay.
@yahoo.com.
And that's 5-2, you said? Or 6-2?
6-2, 6-2.
Okay, 6-2.
Well, that being 62 at my, the Yahoo.
Uh-huh, at Yahoo.
At Yahoo.com. Mm-hmm.
So that O.Bing 62 at mm-hmm. Yahoo.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Excellent.
I'm sorry, and then I said, you had something you said besides the address. You said, well, when are we coming on? I don't know exactly when you came in on the conversation, but I think the biggest problem when we started talking this morning was the black leadership.
Exactly,
and
I agree.
Yeah, I think that this has been the biggest, detriment to us. Always looking for a savior, always looking for someone. And as you saw with COINTELPRO, J. Edgar Hoover made it very clear that the stopping a rise of a messiah. It had to be implemented in order for the information, I guess, and a camaraderie for black people to be stunted. Mm-hmm. So since we know that this information is not new, this is here, here we are 30 years later, still watching black leadership, just as on the plantation, take advantage, leading the people to the slaughter, making deals, going out the back door, while their people are suffering in the front door. This has got to be stopped. But this is something that we really, really have to deal with. In my town, I got involved with a political campaign, a young alderman who was very, 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 very community-oriented, had a lot of positive things going on in the community in terms of peer mediation, gang activity.
Are you in Chicago?
No, I'm in Milwaukee, which is about 80 miles out of Chicago.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what happened with this young man? His father. Matter of fact, I think his father and him is the only aldermanic team father and son in the United States. Well, they were the first. I put it that way. And that was the McGee family, Michael McGee. And to make a long story short, because of his activism. And because of his family has a history of activism, he was put in jail on a bunch of trumped up charges. Now, I'm not condoning anything that he might have done that had been unethical. It was so small. It was something, a matter of maybe somebody gave some chicken dinners to some campaign workers, and they said they went over 99 cents. So that they brought out this archaic law to punish this person. And all the people that were involved with passing out flyers or maybe even encouraging people to exercise their right to vote were put in jail as well, which included myself. So I knew that the Republican Party, and when George Bush sent, I guess, a telegram to one of the disc jockeys here on the conservative station, we knew that, wow, this voter suppression is really going to start coming down, because these people always think, they do all this pre-planning. They're not ever doing anything on the fly. And so with the whole thing with Alberto Gonzalez and how this, and now you're sitting here with the Republican Party and this voter ID coming up for the next election. This kind of planned stuff with black legislation all behind doors, signing up all kinds of bills that would hurt their constituents. If we were more involved with the people that, like you said, select, if we select the people that we elect, then possibly
exactly
we can see possibly we can see someone that would be working in our best interest. Otherwise, we have a bunch of sellout people that are leading us to the slaughter.
As you said, an institute mechanisms by which we can hold them accountable, not just place them in a position of responsibility as representatives, and then representing our interests, not someone dictating to us like that patriarchal kind of mentality whereby, you know, this individual, as you said, is a messiah dictating to us what is in our best interest. The agenda should be generated from a grassroots, from bottom up, not top down. And that's as you said, that's the problem. You know, we are competent.
So
many of us believe that we don't have the wherewithal, that we need a messiah. We do not need a strong people don't need a leader. A leader does not come. He's simply a representative, and that's all he is. And
that's
once he stops
right.
representing our interests, he should be removed, or he or she should be removed. That's simple.
Should be removed, and they have to be dealt with.
Consequences.
They're going to absolutely. You are going to have to pay some consequences because you are actively participating in the demise of your people. And you're going to have to be dealt with, because now we're at a situation, we're at a time where we are dying, our babies are dying. And what you see over right across the road over in Chicago, where the kids are killing each other, just, I mean, it's like you're changing their socks. And I'm wondering, you know, if this was, we can go over to Iraq or we can go over to any other foreign soil and talking about rebuilding and liberation. And we got this stuff going on right here in our own backyard. And we are so disconnected. We have people that live in Milwaukee and say, well, that's happening over in Chicago. Well, you know, we got to. And my thing is, we're going to have to. The people that are conscious, the people that are knowing what we're up against at this particular point. I listen to a lot of people and, you know, what their solution is to this problem. I'm saying we all got to have it. What you said, I piggyback off that. We are all leaders. And where are we? Because we're going to have to step up. Our men folk are going to have to step up and be the men that we expect them to be. Because
and
we
women,
got their back.
You know, I think that's an issue we need to stop. That's a part of it, too, is that the rhetoric is somewhat misandric relative to men. All of us, you know, men. And this black males in the society are a primary target. What we see are we all differentially, the men or women, somehow are becoming casualties of this war. But I think we need to eliminate that targeting of black males, because that's very counterproductive. Really, there are, as you said, really, you know, in terms of females or whatever, that kind
that's
of
true.
Rhetoric comes out of the feminist movement, and that's very counterproductive. We're
yeah,
in a war.
And I,
mm-hmm.
That's right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And when I say our men folk, we have to nurture to allow them to understand that there is a place that everybody else, and we understand the hidden hand that's pushed against their necks, but if they understand that within their self, and within their family, within their culture,
right.
that their women folk are there to support and to hold up.
Yeah. But that's the point, too. That I think we have a lot of the attitudes and assumptions we have really may not be valid. We have to really explore a lot of the expectations we place on men and women may not come or out of our community, and may be coming from another community. It has an insidious effect. I think that's why communism, the Communist Party, was very rational in terms of learning to really explore some of these so-called traditional values that we have that are really counterproductive and really don't have a basis in reality. You know, a lot of the stereotypes we have about women, you know, I think there's, you know, issues in terms of, you know, how black women interact with black men. They can, in collaboration with the larger white race system of racism, white supremacy, you know, that we can have indictments on both sides. But, you know, basically the issue is, I think the primary issue is that we're all in the same situation, and we're based on the how we interact and how the larger system of racism, white supremacy, it chooses to deal with each gender differentially. That's usually how we tend to respond. So black women, in many ways, by being, you know, adopting certain attitudes, particularly bashing black males, that's primary. Well, I'll give you a fact. When black women were being called, designated as the welfare queens, black men came to their, roundly came to their defense. But when black men are being called deadbeat dads, but black women as a group don't seem to be responding with the same kind of allegiance and loyalty that black men did. So I think that's something that we need to explore. And we also need to explore, and even if, you know, without me making a generalization, that we have to realize that a lot of the discourse is being based on what the mainstream media is feeding back to us. Is this really the reality of black? I'm a black male. You know, most of the black males I know, I mean, we should not be on the defensive. I don't have to be. I don't think that what's being told of us is really propaganda. It's not valid, the black men or such and such. And also, again, looking at the dynamics of how black women have been. But these are, as you said, discussions that we should be having behind closed doors. I'll give you one more statement. When I hear, as you said, black leaders like Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, when she went on mainstream media, she was on a Donahue show years ago, and she was talking about the issues that plagued the black community. Why would a so-called black leader go on the issues and discuss our issues and our weaknesses with people who mean us no good? They simply will use that against us. That was strategically a very bad thing to do. So we have to also look at who is really a member of our community. Just because they look black doesn't mean that they are black. Is Oprah Winfrey a member of the black community because she's racially negroid looking? I don't think she is. So we have to really vet. I don't call everybody sister and brother. To me, that's a reference of honor, you know, to be my brother and sister. We have to be more discriminating in terms of, you know, who's black, who's not black, you know, who we accept into, especially like you and me. We understand that there are factions that are very powerful factions that are militating against us, such as COINTELPRO and other factions that we have yet we may not be aware of, but we know this by design. So we have to be very cautious about who's black and who isn't. Yes.
I couldn't have said it better.
Thank you so much. You're so kind.
That I couldn't have said it better myself. But that is so true, because the dynamic and the prism that we're looking at each other is maybe through someone's spectacle. And we need to clean. Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, like I said, because I come from this group of African people who have been kidnapped, basically, and placed in a situation now where we have to understand that we have been here for one particular purpose. The purpose has been served. And this is the group of people that I represent. But the more I step back and look at them and I say, wow, for all our so-called illusion of freedom, we are so much still slaves because we are so disconnected from ourselves. And whether Willie Lynch was a real person, or if the ideology that came from him was if the speech was not really a speech that took place, it doesn't really matter, because the words and the spirit that came out of that is so accurate that describes us perfectly in the situation that we are in.
I'm sorry. And also, I wanted to say again, this is not necessarily bashing blacks in the Caribbean. I live in New York City, and they have been very problematic. I know you heard of Roy Innes, James Farmer, who created the organization called CORE, Congress of Racial Equality. CORE. He appointed Roy Ennis from the Caribbean, and he destroyed the organization. He was championing white people's rights, the dominant white oppressors' rights, when they didn't need another organization, because this whole system is based on them having undeserved privilege. So James Farmer, before he died, actually apologized for Boyning. So we have to really be, as you said, be very aware. There's just we refer to a lot of, as you said, archaic or perhaps old scholarship. There hasn't been any recent. So I find that I'm looking at a lot of white people, you know, Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, scholarship, you know, Chris Hedges, who wrote the book The Death of the Liberal Class, because there's not really a lot of scholarship coming out of the black community. It's not.
Absolutely.
So I look it to them.
That's true. And we have to. And we have to. Like I said, but who and whose responsibility is that? We have to begin to take responsibility for where we at, where we are sitting, and what is going to come down the pike for us. Now we're going to have to start calling out some of these people that don't mean us any good, and then we are going to have to work with the people who know what is happening and what needs to be done at this day and time in order for us to survive. Because it is definitely our survival which is at stake here. When I look at the organizations that we look and hold so dear, the Urban League, the NAACP, the Planned Parenthood, and when you look at all the founders of these organizations.
Margaret Sanger, a eugenicist and arch racist.
Absolutely.
Who started, you know, Planned Parenthood for the express purpose of ridding this country of black people. And up this, like, since the early 1970s, about 15 million black children have been aborted by black women. They're number one. So, I mean, we talk about, like
it
you said,
it is the number one killer of black people.
Exactly.
Not
AIDS, more so than
not. It is the number one killer. We are killing
NAACP.
Ourselves. We are.
Sorry.
So we need. See, these are the. This is the kind of stuff that, and I think, you know, and because this is the stuff. When you look out your window and or you walk four or five blocks and you see a Planned Parent clinic, and you, you know, when they're saturated in the urban areas and mainly black communities, these are the things.
Come on.
That and. Who is allowing this to happen?
Come on,
who are our state senators and our people that we vote for that allow this to happen to actually send our people to execution? We're going to have to hold these people accountable. We're going to have to understand the roots of these organizations. And then we're going to have to make a decision. Are we going to keep these people? Are we going to keep supporting them? Or are we going to run them out?
You made a good... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I'm saying, and to me, that where we stand, and that's it's we can't compromise. We really can't because we're dying every day.
You're really inspiring. I'm sorry. You just, I really am so touched by you. The kind words you say to me, you know, and just, but I just also, well, you said the NAACP. That's really, we know it's a Jewish, or Joel Spingarn, who a Jewish man, you know, who was the president of the NAACP from the very beginning, you know, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, who came to the United States because he said that his native Jamaica, that the black people in America were much more receptive to black power and black identity than his own Jamaican and West Indian compatriots, because they had more of a colonial mentality, and he thought it was hopeless to try and coalesce them. And, you know, as you said, the myth of Willie Lynch, that he supposedly came from the Caribbean. So I said, you know, we should have been very cautious about, even though there were a few, like Stokely Carmichael, who became Kwame Ture, and Harry Belafonte, who, you know, C.L.R. James, you know, there were a few people from the Caribbean, but those are individuals. I mean, people who talk about blacks from Haiti. And I said, you know, these are not the same people, man, who you know, Toussaint Louverture and Emperor Christophe. These people have a colonial mentality, man. They love white people. They have Europhilia. They hate themselves. What you said about the NAACP, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, I'm sure you heard of it. He said, that he called the NAACP not the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, but National Association for the Advancement of Certain People, because they tended to be like fair complexion. And he also said that Joel Spingarn and those whites that were members of the NAACP, that they were acting as spies for the rest of the white race. This famous quote, maybe you heard of it. So, you know, and of course, what is it, the Urban League? What is his name, the black guy, social worker? Whitney Young Jr. Whitney Young. I'm a social worker, by the way, licensed, but I drive a taxi now. I lost my job. Like you said, when we know the history of black, I hear black Americans studying African history. We can study it from an historical perspective, but we have 500 years of evolved a certain ethnic identity that is powerful. You know, we created the first public school system in this country when there wasn't one. I met people from the Caribbean who disparaged a black American, you know, based on the propaganda and their sense of being more readily accepted by the white ruling class. First, I question the identity or the sense of self-worth of any people who believe that their worth is contingent on being accepted by the white ruling class. That says a lot about those people. Their sense of worth, many of the people from the Caribbean and many of the black immigrants, is that they believe that they're more readily accepted by the white ruling class, when the rest of the world is saying that white America is stupid and dumb, so you feel, I mean, is working against their doing things that are very counterproductive and backwards. So you're impressed. You feel privileged and grateful that these benighted backward people somehow favor you. But in any case, particularly since black Americans, you know, fought very hard for the Immigration Act of 1965. Before that, very few blacks, non-whites allowed in this country. But we fought for that, assuming that we would have black solidarity with them. But we were wrong. They disappointed us. You know, they were petty bourgeois opportunists and parasites, the majority. But anyway, as you said, you know, there are a lot of organizations. We have to be clear on that and be very, very forthright in terms of, you know, of being, confronting those obstacles that are preventing us from coalescing as a people. And it's very important for us to make, well, one thing too, I made a parallel to, I was talking to this individual from Haiti, and he was saying that that people in Haiti have a better educated than the black people here. And I don't get on the defense because I know, you know, the best defense is a good offense. I told him, I said, Haiti is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. Black Americans from the black, Congressional Black Caucus, like Randall Robinson, went there to help your people. Black churches, black American churches, sent money to South Africa, to Ethiopia, other blacks. You know, we have been, you know, but what have they given to us? I'm a member of the International African American Caucus, Black Americans who want to establish our own land. So, you know, we have a sense of our own identity. Pan-Africanism will not work by us denying, and there are factions within the black American community who really hate themselves. There are few of them who just like, similar to those who want to be accepted by the white community, have Europhilia. Mm-hmm. There are those who have Afrophilia, who don't really know or love themselves as African-Americans. Example, I'll give another parallel. There are five colleges in the Caribbean. We have in African-America, in black America, 105 colleges. Many of those colleges educate black and Caribbean immigrants. So I'm saying we have to deal with the reality of who we are. There's a book called Race and the IQ of Nations. Firstly, every other black nation, first of all, we are the wealthiest here in the country, right? We have about $1 trillion worth of revenue we generate every year, which would make us, some say, well, I think about the 14th to 15th wealthiest nation on the planet. But also, you know, but I mean, you know these things, and I think it's important for us to validate ourselves, as you said, so we understand that it's not because we're incompetent. This is a war of information, a war of propaganda, a war of morale. You know, this is a war. And if you don't know that you're in a war, you're going to be decimated. And that's what's happening. They don't know. And part of that war was creating a buffer. Again, as Chancellor William wrote in his book, The Destruction of Black Civilization, that they were using.
Oh,
but we have
absolutely.
To update that. You know what I'm saying? So
yes,
talk about it. We have
yes.
to update that and really discuss,
yes.
well, okay,
or Dr.
locally
Amos
here,
Wilson,
within the context of the
yes,
United
the
States. I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm saying, and you are so right. I'm looking at it right now. I was like, yeah, I was just going to mention it. I was like, William Chancellor's book, The Destruction of Black Civilization, or, you know, this is the kind of information that it seems that I think it's a travesty, because it's an act of oppression, suppression, of information, and our people will perish, and we suffer for our lack of knowledge.
Come on now.
Because we don't know, and there is a concerted effort to keep the information. But who, and I have to still go over here, but I always say, well, whose responsibility is it?
Come on.
I'm in a war with someone, I certainly can't expect my enemy to give me the ammunition defeat him. So we are at war, just as you said, brother. We are at war, and I don't really think our people understand that.
You made a point.
That's what I'm concerned with.
And it was politically naive, even for the Black Panthers, to pose that 10-point program of demands. Demand for what? You don't expect, like you said, your enemy, you know, their goal is to destroy us. You know, as you said, in that community, the Freedom of Information Act, the COINTELPRO, the FBI, CIA also, in collaboration, we know that